I was very pleased tonight that we sang, "How Great Thou Art," because tonight I want to talk to you about how great God is. How great is God? How big, how powerful. The psalmist said, "Great is the Lord and greatly to be praised, and His greatness is forever." Great, great, great. How great is God? I think that one of the things that helps us see the greatness of God is seeing our finiteness, to see how ungreat we are, so to speak. And so I want to talk a little bit about people here first, and then we're going to get on to God. And tonight I may be expressing some things that you have a rough time understanding. What I want you to do is I want you to start to say with me in gist. That is, get the overall impact of what I am saying. Because I want to get into some things that perhaps are difficult to understand. But stay with me in the overall intent and the overall content. And I think that you will have a sense from the Scriptures of how great God is and see some applications of it. Now, one thing we haven't done this week, and most conferences just wouldn't seem complete without it, and that is we haven't checked to see if there's any Marines in the audience. Are there any Marines here in the audience? There's one Marine. There's a former Marine. Two Marines? You know, everybody here knows the difference between the Marines and the Boy Scouts, don't they? Yeah, the Boy Scouts have adult leadership. Now, you heard about the two Marines that got killed raking leaves? They fell out of the tree. The Marines have a new game that they're playing out in the barracks now. It takes two Marines. The first Marine sits there and he thinks of a number and he says a number. And then the second Marine wins the game if he can say a higher number. Now, two Marines were playing this game, and the first Marine, he sat there, and he thought, and he thought, and he thought. After a long time of thinking, he said, "Three." And the other guy thought, and thought, and thought. He finally said, "You win." I tell that story not just to give a little bit of a rib to the Marines, but to illustrate a point. Some historians feel that many centuries ago, that is the situation man was in, that he could not count higher than three. One, two, three. And so I want you to suppose that you're that Marine sergeant who can only count to three. One, two, three. And let's suppose that you were given the job to take bed check that night. Now, how would you take bed check? You'd go in and you'd say, "Well, there's one man, there's two men, there's three men, and uh-oh. And well, there's one man, there's two men, there's three men." Now, that wouldn't work. Now, if you were really clever, what you would do is you'd do what I just did earlier tonight and go out and get a pocket full of rocks. You see? And then as the guys went off during the day, when you knew all of them were there, you'd take and you see when this guy left, you'd put a rock down. And when that guy left, the next guy left, you'd put another rock down. And as each guy left during the day, you'd put a rock down. You see, you don't even have to count. And as each guy leaves, you put a rock down. And then you've got as many rocks as there are people. And then they come in to go to bed. And as they come in, you just pick one off. As each guy comes into bed, and if there's a, you know, and there's a rock left there, you say, "Hey, there's a guy that isn't in bed." See, and that's how you could take rock. In bed check without being able to count. Yeah, you think that's funny, but it's true. And what that leads me to believe, you know, what that leads us to, and this is a little bit of mathematics at this point. I hate to use that word because everybody, when I say the word mathematics, goes, It's a little concept that we use in how do you compare two numbers that are too big to count? And that's the way we compare them. If you have two numbers that are too big for you to count, what you do is you see if you can match them up all the way on down the line. If you can match them up all the way down the line, we say they're both the same size. See? Now, if I can't count how many over here, and I can't come out of here, and I can match them on up, I say, oh, I've got the same number of fingers in each hand. Now, you see, that's sort of trivial to you because of how smart you are, but I want to start moving on into the realm of infinity because we're wanting to talk about how great God is. And one of the qualities of God is that God is infinite. You see, if you apply the fact that God is infinite to time, what do you have? God is eternal. If you apply the fact that God is infinite to power, what do you have? God is omnipotent. If you apply the fact that God is infinite to knowledge, what do you have? He's omniscient. You see, the fact that God is infinite is really the key in my thinking. So how big is infinite? Well, we start off, and when you were a child, you probably were standing around with a bunch of friends and somebody said, what's the biggest number? And you probably sat there, you were 5 or 6 years old, and you said, 100! And your friend said, 101. And you said, 1,000. He said, 1,001. And you said, 1,000,000,000,000. And he said, 1,000,000,000,000,001. And you realized you were never going to win the game. You came very quickly to realize that there is no biggest number. And so we start off and we say, well, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And I'll just use those dots to indicate that it keeps going on and on and on. And we say, man, it just keeps going on and on and on. There is no biggest number. You can't count them. Now let me show you how big this is. What if you just took every other number? Yeah, see? Then you'd have 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, on and on. If you only take half the numbers, how many do you have? We have just as many as you started off with. Because we said if the numbers are too big for us to count, if there's too many for us to count, all you do is you match them up. You see, and I can match the 1 with the 2, the 2 with the 4, the 3 with the 6, and on down here. And down here is 18, and up here is 36. And any number that's here, I multiply it by 2, and I get a number that's down here, don't I? That isn't too hard to do either. What if we even make it more complicated than that? What if we only take every 10th number? We start off and we say, well, take 10, 20. We skip 9 whole numbers. We skip 9 more. 30, 40. How many numbers are there? Just as many as we started with, aren't there? Because I can compare 1 to this, 2 to this, 3 to this. Matter of fact, if you take any number down here, all I do is take the 0 off the end, and I got a number up here, don't I? And I can just match them up this way, you know, all the way on down the line. And what if I put, 100, 200, skip every 99 numbers? I only take 1% of the numbers, and I skip, how many do I have? Just as many as I start off with. See how big this is? I'll tell you what let's do. Let's go the other direction. Let's see how many more numbers we can cram in between. And I'm going to cram a whole bunch of numbers in between just 1 and 2. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at just not just between 1 and 2. I'm going to look at all the fractions in between there. And there's 1/2, and here's 3/4, and here's 1/3, and here's 3/5, and here's 67/96. And you know, we got all these crazy numbers in there. Now, how many of them are there? Boy, you say, boy, there's a lot of them. Seems to me as there's more of those than there are of these counting numbers, wouldn't there? Now, let me show you how many there are. The way I'm going to do this, I'll count them all for you. I'll count all the fractions for you. And we start off, and if we do 1 over 1, and then we take 1 over 2, 1 over 3, and 1 over 4, and just imagine that line keeps going on forever, okay? And then I start a new line, and that's 2 over 1, 2 over 2, 2 over 3, 2 over 4, and that just continues on. And then I take 3 over 1, 3 over 2, and that continues on. And then 4 over 1, and that continues. And this just keeps on going that way. Now the question is, can I count all those numbers? Somebody could shake in their head, no, you can't count all those numbers. Now let's see. We could start 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but we'd never finish that first row, would we? Well, let's try it the other way. 1, 2, 3, 4, no, we'd never finish that column.
We can't do it that way.
But what if we did it this way? What if I call that number one right there? Then what if I start up here at the top and I call that two, and I come down here for three, and I go on an angle. And then I go, let's see, this is four, five, six, and I got an angle there. And then I go 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Am I ever going to run out of numbers? I've got all the numbers I need. So I have taken the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I've matched them up with every fraction all the way on down the line. And if you name any fraction, I'll tell you where it is. I'll tell you what number is associated with it. I can count them. So that not only can we just take one out of every hundred or one out of every thousand, we can take and we can cram in between all these numbers, all these fractions. And how many fractions are there between just 0 and 1, 1 and 2? Or between 0 and 1? How many fractions are there? Yeah, there's just as many fractions as there are between 0 and every place. Infinite. You see how big infinity is? When we talk about infinite, man, we're talking about something that's really huge. And man worked with this for a while, and he started expanding his thinking about how big infinity is, how big an infinite God would be. And that's not the end of it. Because in 1906, a man by the name of Gregor Cantor came along, and a great mathematician, and he proved what turned out to be a very, very significant theorem of mathematics. And what he proved was that there is not just one infinity, but that there are an infinite number of infinities in increasing size or increasing order. Each one bigger than the one before. And you know the one that we've been looking at? That's the smallest one. That's the smallest one. Matter of fact, they ran out of denotation of Greek letters, and they started using Hebrew letters, and they called it Aleph. That's not a very good Hebrew Aleph, for those of you who know how to write the Hebrew alphabet. And we find that we call the smallest infinity Aleph sub null. And that smallest infinity is the same size, I'll use three numbers to indicate, as the counting numbers. I want that a comma. 2, 3, 4, 5, which is pretty big because that's still all the set of all of the fractions. You know? Yeah, I'll just leave it there. You see, and they just, you know, in the set of all fractions, just keep going. That's the smallest infinity. The funny thing about it is, the next size infinity is called Aleph sub 1, and that's the size of all measurements, all real numbers. And that's all of these numbers plus all of the numbers that would be expressed by and that just keeps on going. It's hard to express a number that can't be reduced down into a fraction. Do you know that? It's very hard. Here's one. You have a point, a 0, 1, and then a 0, and then two 1s, and then a 0, and then three 1s, and then a 0, and then four 1s, and then there's going to be a 0, and then 5. It just keeps on going like that. And that decimal cannot be reduced down to a fraction. It's hard to write decimals that can't be reduced down to fraction. But all of those numbers, all measurements, anything that's a possible size would be in this next size infinity. That's the next size up. The next size infinity, it gets a little bit more interesting. The next size infinity, Aleph sub 3, is the same size as the set of all possible curves. Now, when I'm saying using the word curves, as a mathematician, we use the word curves. By that, I mean any little squiggle, dotted line, anything that you can imagine. So there's a curve. There's a curve, there's a curve, there's a curve, that's a curve, those four dots. Here's a curve, you know. And I'm not going to try to write them all down. And that's the third size infinity. That's the third biggest thing in terms of infinities. Then we get up to Aleph sub 2, rather. I skipped a number, excuse me. And then Aleph sub 3 is the four size infinity, and there is no known model. By that I mean, you take all of the smartest people in all of the world, and not one of them knows anything that's that big. Nobody knows anything that's that big. I mean, we can invent something that's that big theoretically, but we don't know of anything that I could explain to you that's that size. There's no known model. Now, you see where we are? Humanity? When it comes to infinities, where are we? We're the same place as that Marine I started off with. That's why I started off with that Marine. Giving him the raspberry. But the fact is that when we start talking about infinities, we can count 1, 2, 3, and then somebody says 3. And you think and you think and you think, and all the best minds in this world can't come up with a higher number. Now, I would propose to you that when we talk about the greatness of God, that God counts this way. That when God counts 1, that's what He's counting 1. Aleph sub no. All of those numbers, so many we can't even count, and we can't even fathom it. And when He says 2, that many. And so when I go like this and I say, how many fingers was that? You don't even have to count them. You say, oh, I know how many fingers that was. It was 3. And it's that hard for God to look down and to count this. Let's see some applications of that. Matthew 10, verse 30. Verse that many of you know. Talking about how concerned God is with you. I'm going to start a couple of verses earlier. He says, and fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not 2 sparrows sold for a farthing, and one of them shall not fall upon the ground without your Father? He says, look, he said, it just takes a couple of pennies to buy 2 of these birds. He says, that's how worthless they are. And yet, that one of those birds will die without God getting into the picture. Because God knows about it. And then verse 30, he says, but the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Ever wondered about that verse? I'm sure you have. I had one friend of mine tell me, oh, I don't believe God actually has numbered. I think that it just means that He could. I have problems with people that do that with scriptures. It says, the hairs of your head are numbered. Now, you see, that seemed hard to this guy. That's why he wanted to cop out. But I just look at this. There's at most 4 billion people on the face of this earth. Somebody said that nobody has more than 200,000 hairs on their head. Some of us a little less. That would mean, if that's true, that would be only 800 trillion hairs to count. How much is that counting? Well, we're still right up here, aren't we? Aleph sub no. That's like God saying 1. You see how great God is? How big? I really believe that. God says, 1. He's counted all the hairs of your head. And He looks down. How many? Oh, 1. 1 in my economy, in their economy. How about that guy? Oh, that. See?
What about Ephesians 1:7? We've already looked at that verse.
In whom we have redemption through His blood, the forgiveness of sins, according to the riches of His grace. How rich is His grace in forgiving our sins? Well, all He does is He forgives us how often? 1. Yeah, you caught it, didn't you? What if I commit that sin again, and 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 again? How many times does God have to forgive me? In His economy, 1. See, I get very discouraged. Commit the same sin 1,000 times. Maybe 100,000, I don't know. How many times have I had selfish, prideful thoughts? I hope God doesn't tell me. It'd probably be too discouraging. How many times will He forgive me? One. You know, how far out do you want to go, Rush? You know, if I committed it at 10 times every second, I haven't begun to exhaust this, have I? You know, 10 times every second, that would only be, you know, 600 times a minute. You know, 3,600 times an hour, and on and on and on. I couldn't begin to exhaust the riches of His grace. That's how great God is. How great God is. God is that great. How great Thou art. What about His love? We could sit here and make application of this on so many different areas. What I want to do is I just want to point out a few of these applications so that next time you start reading and you see something about how great God is, that you start grooving on the greatness of God. What about God's love? Jeremiah 31:3. Many of you know this. And the Lord appeared of old unto me, saying, Yea, I have loved thee with an everlasting love. Now I know when He said everlasting, He meant in terms of time. Let me take the privilege with you of interpreting that a little bit broader. Can I say with an eternal love? Not Aleph sub no, not infinite in that sense, not Aleph sub one, not Aleph sub two, not Aleph sub three. Eternal love, infinite. Let me interpret it that way. How great is God's love? I couldn't fathom it if it was just at this level. God says, I have loved thee with an everlasting love. I believe that God is trying to express here the fact of His greatness and the infinity of His love. How far it ranges. Boy, the cross means a lot to you when you see that. Psalm 90. Starting in verse 2. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever thou hast formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God. From everlasting to everlasting. Thou turnest man to destruction and sayest, Return, ye children of men, for 1,000 years in thy sight are as but yesterday. How great is God in time? 1,000 years are as but yesterday. That's what the psalmist said. He saw His greatness. Psalm 48. Great is the Lord, and greatly to be praised in the city of our God, in the mountain of His holiness. How great is God? Great, and greatly to be praised. He is fantastic. He is infinite, infinite, if you will. He just goes beyond not just this. He goes beyond all of it. And then in verse 14, He says, For this God is our God. Oh, do you catch the impact of that? Here is a people, the Jews, and David writing as a representative of them, is seeing God's greatness, and he says, This God is the God that we serve. Now, they serve other gods, but you know how big those other gods are? They don't even start here. They're not even alephs of nulls. We can draw a line and say, well, they can't count below above that, or they don't have power above that. And we could put a line and we say, they can't go above that. And this God is our God forever and ever. He will be our guide. Even unto death. Several people have indicated that this week they wanted to find something out about knowing God's will. I believe that one of the keys of knowing God's will is seeing God's greatness. Because as the psalmist saw God's greatness, he says, this God is our God, and He is our guide. You see, what our problem is that we are a little bit afraid that God isn't all that great. And maybe He needs a little bit of help from me. And He'll go halfway in showing me His will, but I better go the other half and find it. You know, it's in here someplace. It's on the, you know, where is it? You know, and we look around frantically trying to find God's will. I have a very simple solution to this. It's so simple that some people get perturbed at me for having it. You know what my solution is? Is that knowing God's will is God's problem, not mine. He is the one that knows His will. And He is the one who said, I'm going to guide you, Russ. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Lean not unto thine own understanding. Why should I not lean to my own understanding? Good grief, it's obvious. I'm so finite. I don't know anything. In all thy ways, acknowledge Him. And what? You've couldn't. He shall. You think that He's not big enough? You think He's going to have a problem showing you what He wants you to do? Whenever God wants to, He'll let you know. You know what your only problem is? Trusting in Him and not in yourself. Acknowledging Him in all your ways. The first and great commandment. Love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind. Second is like unto it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Acknowledge Him and all. Do the things that you know you ought to do. And God says, I'll guide you. He is so great. You know the second problem people have, I think, in knowing God's will? And that is that they question God's greatness and His love. See, here's what happened. When you were a youngster, if you happened to had a situation similar to mine, and I think most all of us had it, somebody came along and said, do me a favor. And he said, what is it? And he said, just promise me. Well, what do you want me to promise you? Well, just promise me you'll do it. Well, what is it? Well, promise me. And finally, curiosity got the best of you, and you say, okay, I promise. And then you found out what it was and you didn't want to do it. And they said, but you promised. You see, and along comes God and He says, okay, I want to direct your life. And you say, what is it, Lord? And He says, you just acknowledge me. I'll do the directing. Oh, God, somebody pulled that one on me a few years ago. See, that's what people think. No. Somebody already pulled that one on me. And we don't see God's infinite love, God's greatness in His capacity to lead us, God's greatness in His capacity to reveal His will to us, and God's greatness in the fact that He has a full-orbed, complete plan for my life. As insignificant as I am. You know why He can do it for somebody as insignificant as I am? Well, because there's only a few of us here on earth. Well, you know, I mean, there's just so few of us, and it's, you know, it's no problem at all for Him. That's how great God is. And then He says, okay, when I'm ready to guide you, Russ, I'll bring a bunch of circumstances to play upon your life. And God's going to lead in a great number of ways. And so when I think of knowing God's will, I think, my problem isn't knowing God's will. My problem is trusting in the Lord, acknowledging Him in all my ways. That's the problem I have. Making sure that I don't get in the way of myself. Because God is the one who said He will lead me and He will guide me. Oh, if we could ever really grasp the greatness of God and the greatness of His love and His care for us, we would never balk. We would never drag our heels. We would never hesitate. Complete obedience belongs to the great God. Why? Because He's great. How great?
much greater. 1, 2, 3, God's far out beyond all that. Let's pray. Father, it is unreal how great you are. We tend to think of you as some sort of human that has just got a lot more capacity than any of us. And that's sort of trying to create you in the image of man, instead of realizing that we have had the privilege of being created in your image. And tonight, we want to worship you because you are great. You're greatly to be praised, and your greatness is beyond comprehension. And Father, because you're so great, and because your love is in proportion to your character, your love, Paul says, is beyond understanding. We couldn't possibly figure it out. And because your concern for us is so great, and because your protective qualities are so great, because everything about you is so great, we find ourselves left with only one alternative, and that is lifting our hearts and our heads up to you and saying, praise be to your name, and committing ourselves to completing all that you direct us to do. And Lord, you created this world by speaking a word, and anything that you want to accomplish, you could accomplish by speaking just one more word, and yet you've taken a bunch of insignificant ones like us and said, I want to use you. I want to glorify my name by taking some of the most foolish things, some of the weakest things, some of the most base things in this world to confound all the rest. So Lord, we commit ourselves by an act of our will to fulfill your will. And we look to you for that guidance, for the quietness of heart, to know that you are guiding us, you have been guiding us, and you will guide us even unto death. Amen.